You're listening to 32 Bars.
Hey, listeners, it's Peter. Just a heads up. There are a couple of colorful words towards the end of the episode that haven't been bleeped out, just in case you have kids around or are sensitive to that kind of thing. Okay, here's the episode.
My name's Jackie Nguyen. I'm 28. I've lived in New York for about 5 years, and I studied musical theater at Cal State Fullerton.
Back in 2017, on a blustery day in January, Jackie and I sat down to chat about her life in the arts. One of her earliest inspirations, like a lot of kids, was Harry Potter.
I started reading the books when I was 11. I grew up with it. I waited every year or every other year for the book to be released, and then I went to every midnight premiere. The first movie came out on my 13th birthday. It helped me out a lot through middle school.
So you kind of grew up with Harry.
Yeah. Like, I was that generation.
That's amazing.
Why I have glasses now is because I used to share a bed with my mom, and I would want to read Harry Potter so bad that I kept a flashlight under my pillow.
Seriously.
And I would read it every day until the batteries in the flashlight died. And then I would go to school and steal the batteries from the remotes from the library and put them back into the flashlight every other day. And that's how I read Harry Potter.
Jackie told me that, like a lot of us, her path to working in theater wasn't exactly a straight line.
So I didn't grow up doing musical theater. I just grew up singing in the choir in middle school, kind of in the background. And then we had like a guest artist come in to teach us a free hip hop class. And I just remembered loving it and asking him, like, where can I do this? And he said, hey, like, the dance team is having auditions, like, you should come. Ages 13 and up, anybody can go. And I auditioned and I made it. And I just started dancing on this like troupe, like America's Best Dance Crew, kind of like those type of teams in San Diego before they were reality shows or whatever. And then we got hired to be the opening act for Ashley Simpson.
And which park was this at?
SeaWorld.
So were there animals involved in her show?
No.
Or it was just like her?
We were like where the seal, like the sea lion show was, and they just like redid the stage. I didn't really know what I wanted to do with my life. I thought I was going to be a backup dancer in Hollywood. But a mentor of mine was like, hey, have you heard of musical theater? I was like, never. And so she told me, well, Miss Saigon is playing at the local, like, you know, regional theater, Starlight Theater.
Tell me that was the first show that you saw.
That was the first musical that I saw was Miss Saigon. I'm a Vietnamese American actor. Mm-hmm. But being Asian and watching Asian actors on stage telling this story about Vietnam and, like, I don't know, it was so incredibly relatable. I was like, what is musical theater? Like, can I do this? Is this something I can do? Like, how do people get into that?
What did you relate to most about that? Do you remember?
I think just the story. Like, mm-hmm. My family immigrated from Vietnam in 84, and my mom was at that gate. Like, there's a scene where there's, like, the helicopter comes down. That's, like, the gates of the embassy. She was there. Like, she was at that gate.
If you've never seen Miss Saigon, the scene she's describing is a flashback to 1975, when the Viet Cong were approaching Saigon. There was an order to evacuate the American soldiers and personnel from the embassy back to America. And in this scene, they shut the embassy gate, splitting up Kim, the Vietnamese protagonist, and Chris, the American soldier she fell in love with. There's a giant helicopter on stage, and the music, lights, and sound effects are dizzying. It's all very dramatic. But I forget sometimes that people actually lived through this. I ask Jackie if her mother ever brings up her experiences during that time.
She talks a little bit about it. If I'm in a production of Miss Saigon, she'll talk about it more.
Yeah.
Because she's like, oh, well, now I can tell you certain things. But if I'm not, it's something that she doesn't really like to talk about because it's, like, still hard for her to get through.
What about your dad?
He doesn't really mention it at all. Like, at all. It's not something to be talked about. Because we're here in America. That, you know, like, that was the goal. It shouldn't be brought up anymore. But my mom, every once in a while, will, in order to teach me a lesson about being humble or appreciating what you have. She'd be like, you know, this is what I had to go through, la, la, la. So,
do you appreciate those stories now that you're older?
Oh, my God, yeah. I didn't when I was growing up. I was just like, ugh, like, it's not my fault I'm American. Like, I didn't ask for you to go, you know, to go through that. I didn't ask to be born here. This is just what happened. But now, obviously, I, like, super appreciate those stories and see what she had to do just to be here.
Jackie has a unique perspective as an Asian American actor in the theater industry. I asked her what her thoughts were on representation and what her experience has been like so far.
I just feel like so many Asian actors have been pocketed into so many stereotypes, and we're kind of like a more quieter, like, group of people. And either if that's because of how we were raised or, like, you know, culturally, that's what it's supposed to be like. I just feel like now we're starting to have a little bite and a little bit more edge to our voice. And I just think we aren't those things. We're not ninjas. We're not, like, with accents. We don't, you know, not all of us are Chinese. And there's so many stories that should be told by Asian people just because we are also just people.
Jackie continued pursuing a theater career and performed in productions all over the world. But in 2014, she discovered something that would impact just about every part of her life.
In between a production of Miss Saigon and Grinch, which are my bread and butter, clearly, I lost all my hair due to alopecia. Sometimes, like, women, mostly, like, if they're pregnant and they go through childbirth, like, their bodies are under severe stress and they can have alopecia, or depression, or even, like, something, your diet, it just gets out of hand. Your body can be triggered. It's just, if your body goes through a crazy physical change or sensation, that can trigger alopecia. A lot of women have it, but they just haven't had it triggered yet. I lost all my hair and I was bald for a year and a half. I lost it, majority of it, I want to say like 80% of it in 2 weeks. Every time I go shower, another handful, like, thick ponytail amounts would fall out in the shower. Every 3 days I would shower, and then like every 4 days I would shower because I didn't want my hair to fall out. It was just became like scarier to like run my hand through my scalp.
I'm not sure how I would react to the trauma of seeing all of my hair fall out at once. I mean, it's got to be terrifying and disorienting. I'm also not sure how much of that experience I'd want to share with other people. But for Jackie, she ultimately decided to open up about it in kind of a big way.
I wrote and documented my experience, like, before I shaved my head, when I shaved my head, afterwards. I wrote a blog, and then it got published through Huffington Post, and like NBC Asian America also published it, and a few other websites like asked for it, just because it was like, I don't know, I was very honest about my depression, and I think people liked that or could relate to that, and a lot of women with alopecia were reaching out to me who didn't act for their life. You know, they were just like normal women who had day jobs, but they weren't willing to express like what the struggles that they were going through with alopecia.
What would they say to you when they wrote?
Oh my God, I got people that would wear wigs all day, every day, and never even told their husbands that they had alopecia. They would take a shower with their wig on, and like glue their wigs to their scalp, and like even like be in bed with their husband, and like if their wigs were readjusted, they'd like run to the bathroom, readjust them, and come back. That was the craziest one that I heard, and I remember being like, well, I really hope you can find freedom in telling like your husband about this. Like, if you can tell me about it, certainly you can tell your husband. She was really embarrassed, and she was afraid that, like, her husband wouldn't like her bald, because that's what made her feel feminine, which is true. Like, that's what I went through. I felt like an alien. I didn't feel like a girl or a woman.
Jackie was slowly figuring out how to adapt to living a life without hair. She was booking work and getting a lot of attention from the media. But I wanted to know deep down how she was feeling during that time.
I appeared stronger than I felt on the inside. I was like this badass bald girl, but still, like, on the inside, when I, like, walked into the room, I was terrified because I didn't have, I know, you know, shows wig you. So, like, that was comforting, but still, like, to expose yourself to the point where, like, I really didn't know who I was at that point.
The blog Jackie wrote is brutally honest. She talks about her disease in detail, posts photos of her head as she's losing her hair, even opened up about dealing with depression, homelessness, and the death of her brother, William. It's a really vulnerable read. I asked her how she came to the decision to share so much of that publicly.
Well, one of the main reasons was because New York is so small, and I kept bumping into people, and I would be wearing hats to different places, and this was, like, the middle of the summer. Like, I had beanies on, and I remember a friend of mine hugged me, and my beanie fell off, and she saw my scalp, and she gasped, and she, not on purpose or anything, she was like, oh my God, are you okay? Like, are you sick? And I was like, kind of. I have this disease. I'm not sick. I'm not dying. But I am losing my hair. I will be bald. It's really hard to explain.
Yeah, that makes sense. Because when I see someone who has lost hair, the first thing I think of is cancer, you know?
Yeah, so. And I didn't want people to think I had cancer. I was becoming bald so quickly. And I didn't know, like, if I should buy wigs. I didn't know what I should do. So I blogged so I can, like, kind of tell my friends, like, this is what's going on. I'm okay. Physically, I'm fine. I'm not dying. But just letting you know, I might be wearing wigs. I might not. You might see me in the audition room, or you might not. Like, I just felt like I had to put it all out there to explain to my friends what was happening. I mean, it's still hard because I still live with it. My hair has grown back, but alopecia still lives within you, and, like, at any point I could lose my hair again. There's no, like, cure for it. There's no fix. There's no medicine. There's not, like, a diet that I can do to automatically take it away from my body. Like, I can do things to help it, like meditate, calm my stress levels down. Some women try gluten-free to, like, kind of clear out their guts, because, like, alopecia is a sister disease to eczema and to, you know, like, different skin diseases and different thyroid diseases. And so they think, oh, if certain other diseases have this type of, like, regimen, try it too. It might help. But I haven't talked to anyone with alopecia who's like, this shampoo made my hair grow back. You know, like, there's no, like, magic formula for it.
According to the National Alopecia Areata Foundation, this autoimmune disease affects as many as 6.8 million people in the U.S. I was curious if she knew any other actors going through a similar situation.
Yeah, I do. I only know one other actor. Well, I know two. She's not very much of a friend other than, like, an acquaintance on, like, Instagram. But there's an actor in L.A. who does film and commercials. And then I know a musical theater actor who's had alopecia for a really long time. And she's been on Broadway a bunch of times, too. And Bob Richard actually introduced me to her. And we've, like, chatted a few times and, you know, just related about things. And
was it nice to finally find someone that was,
yeah,
kind of
that was one of the only things that helped me. And there was also, like, an alopecia group, like a AA.
Or, like, support group.
Support group. That was kind of helpful. It was really hard, though, because a lot of those women were struggling so much. And I felt so thankful to have such a big community that embraced me and loved me. And, like, no matter what I was going through, like wigs aren't something we're like, it's not a stranger to us, like the show business, you know?
Yeah.
So I felt very thankful, or like, at least in my jobs, I can be wigged. But other people who were nurses or like, you know, they were struggling so bad.
Wigs are also expensive.
Oh my God. Literally so expensive. And I, at the time, didn't have any money. So I had to get like cheap ones that itched and like looked disgusting. So
what
I never
wore
them.
What is like an average quality passable wig cost?
Like, well, if you want like human hair with like no line, if it's fitted to you, it's upwards of $3,000 to $5,000.
Wow.
Yeah. And I applied for this scholarship thing where like you can be picked in a lottery where it's like measured, handmade to you and everything like that. And like, but there are, you're also competing. I don't want to say competing, but like
you're in a lottery with
in a lottery with not only people with alopecia, but you know, cancer burn victims.
Sure,
and
sure.
There are some, and those obviously like those take precedent in so many ways and reasons, because like their suffering goes beyond what we had to endure. And I actually donated my hair a year before I got alopecia. I donated 14 inches. And then when I, to Locks of Love, and when I lost my hair, I was like jokingly being like, can I have that back? Like, I need my hair.
But not really.
But like, obviously like, not really, but like. It's hard because so many people who tried to help me would say like, well, you look so badass bald. You can rock the bald look. You know, like who cares? You don't need hair. You still look beautiful. And that never helped me because I kept thinking, well, yes, like I obviously appreciate you saying that, but say that you went to a barber or, you know, hair salon and they accidentally dyed your hair blonde and you wanted it red. You would flip. You would go ballistic and cry. That is a fraction of what I am going through, because I don't even know if my hair will come back.
Wow.
And I would get angry. And I remember going to therapy and the therapist was like, you know, I understand your anger, but people are reaching out to help. And like, they don't know what it's like in your shoes. So yeah, so I had to find other women who were bald for us to be pissed together, to be like, I don't care what I look like bald. I didn't ask to be bald or badass.
Yeah.
I didn't want this.
Do you think there's a better response for people?
For me personally,
yeah.
The best response that I would that would help me personally would be like, that fucking sucks. And I'd be like, yes, thank you. It does. And that's it. Really,
just
at the end of the day?
Just someone to say, I acknowledge that this is a really shitty situation.
Versus trying to be like, you know, it's okay. Because it's not. Of course, you still want to be appreciative of your life and appreciative of the things that you actually still do have, your health. But it's still really tough. Like, it's still a big deal. It's not like, oh, you just cut off an inch of your hair, you know, or it's a different color. Like, people be like, well, hair grows back. Like, I don't know if mine will, you know? So I think just telling someone that you're sorry and that it sucks is the best thing. That's all they really want, is for someone to know that, like, man, you're going through a tough time.
It was January, so I asked Jackie if she had any wishes for the new year.
I hope people are nicer to each other.
Hear, hear. I'll drink to that.
Yes.
Hello?
Jackie, hey, how's it going?
Hi, Peter.
What was it like listening to yourself 3 years ago?
Oh my God, it was so weird because I obviously, like, I didn't even recall us doing that. And the minute I started listening to it again, it all like flooded back.
Would you be comfortable at all talking about your relationship with alopecia and your hair and stuff now?
Oh yeah, totally. I mean, I'd love to. It still is fully grown. I've had a few bouts of, you know, a little bit of bald spots here and there, especially lately because of, you know, the pandemic and COVID-19. Everything that's happening with the world right now is extremely stressful.
Mm.
So I haven't experienced full loss since we've last spoken, but I have had like little patches that have fallen out, which is a little scary, but it just is comes with the territory of being stressed out.
Gotcha. I also was curious. So I'm really excited about your new venture. Could you talk a little bit about what you've been up to?
Yeah, it's funny. When we recorded that podcast, I mentioned Miss Saigon a lot. And it's funny how much I mentioned that that was my bread and butter, because it truly is. And I actually was on the Broadway revival tour of Miss Saigon. And that was a huge accomplishment of mine. And I've spent the last 18 months traveling on the road with that show. But we came to a halt, just like all Broadway shows did because of COVID, in March. And our show closed early, about 4 months early, which was a really, really, really difficult thing to go through. And so while I was on the road, actually, I was determining what I wanted to do once tour was over. And I decided to kind of pivot my life a little bit and jump into entrepreneurship. And I wanted to dive into opening my own coffee shop. I was really nervous pivoting into a, like, business and pivoting into kind of like a entrepreneurship and not knowing a single thing about opening a company or opening a coffee shop. And it's actually, it is difficult, but it's also not as hard as I thought. And I think it's because as actors and as artists, we've had to be so malleable and so like on the fly with your work, that now that I'm entering like a different, a different business type, it's not as scary as I thought. In fact, like, I think theater is much scarier than opening a business, which is crazy.
I think a lot of people would agree with you for sure. So what's the name of your company, and where are you guys based out of?
It's called Cafe Cafe, and it's going to be based out of Kansas City for now. I've moved from New York to Kansas City. Yeah, I wanted to find an area of the United States that wasn't as populated with, honestly, diversity or Vietnamese culture, just so that I feel like that exposure to a place that doesn't have it is the only way I personally feel like we can start diversifying things and exposing other people to other flavors and cultures and concepts, like, you know, like a coffee shop that highlights more of the hospitality than, you know, the work environment per se.
Have you had to think much about how COVID plays into all of this in terms of safety and all that sort of thing? What does the shop kind of look like?
Yeah, so I was going to do a brick and mortar, but because of all of that that's happening, I decided to make my coffee shop mobile. I bought a mini home, like a tiny home, and it's going to travel around. And so I actually can comply to all of the guidelines and social distancing, and I can still serve my coffee. And so I've created kind of like a mobile coffee shop, a traveling little Vietnamese coffee shop around Kansas City.
I love it. I want Richard, Maggie, and I to take a road trip out to get some coffee from you guys.
Oh my God, please do. Or we can meet halfway or something.
So what's the best way for anybody listening to support you guys? And is there a place that we can kind of see your progress and help you out at all?
Definitely. If you go to our Instagram at Cafe Cafe, there's links to our YouTube page and to everything. And I've actually documented the whole process. And so everyone can just kind of follow along of my transition from being an actor to, you know, coffee shop owner.
I was going to ask, too, the coffee that you're selling, are you getting it from local roasters?
So I'm actually using two different coffees. I'm using one that's going to be a local Kansas City roaster. And I've created my own blend called the Dragon Blend. And it's, it's going to be like only available online and in my little coffee cart. But then I'm also partnering with a local roaster in New York, and they are called Win Coffee Supply. And what they do is they import beans from Vietnam, and they work with local farmers in Vietnam to help kind of like spread the awareness of Vietnamese coffee. And so I've worked with them as well. And so my shop is going to have beans from Vietnam to bring in like authenticity and culture, and also beans from Kansas City to help support the local Kansas City coffee community. So I've tried to integrate both, and they both are going to be available at my shop. And so, because that was really something I was wanting to make sure that was at the core of my company, was making sure I could support local, but also support my culture and make sure that we are also supporting farmers in Vietnam. So I've partnered with two awesome, awesome roasters.
Thanks for chatting, and I wish you all the best, and we'll definitely be supporting you here at 32 Bars.
Oh, thank you, Peter. And I'm like so honored to be here and to be able to, you know, reflect on our recording from years ago. But it was also really cool to hear.
It's been quite a ride, eh?
I know. Life is crazy.
Thanks so much, Jackie. All right, that's it for this week. A huge thanks to Jackie for her time and for sharing her story. If you have the means, please consider checking out her Kickstarter page and supporting Cafe Cafe. She's got some amazing swag you can get in exchange for your support, including a Vietnamese coffee kit for in-home brewing, prayer candles, and even a hand-knit garment made by her ridiculously adorable mom. I'll post that link in the episode notes and on our website, 32barspodcast.com, along with resources about alopecia. Finally, a special thanks to Chris Smucker for some of the sounds I used to create the music for this episode. If you make music, go and download his sample pack, Tape Cult. He's doing some amazing stuff with analog tape loops. Make sure you check it out. All right, as always, be well, stay safe, and thanks for listening.